you were provided public Wi-Fi or in a Starbucks or in a restaurant, this is the best case to be using VPN for most users. It actually originated as a business tool, but it was very complex to set up. And today it's pretty easy to set up and it's very affordable. So I'm going to explain to you what it is, why you should be concerned about it, and I'll try not to get technical because this topic does get technical, and I'll show you a few things that are a little bit on the technical side, but I won't go too far into it. So you can always look at the slides again later if you want to catch up and review what I was talking about. But basically, the point that I want to give to you is why you need VPN and where you'll want to use it. Okay? So VPN stands for Virtual Private Networking. And by virtual, we mean it sort of pretends that it's something, right? It's not really something, but it acts as if it is something. And private is we're trying to make it so that your data is private. Anybody concerned about data privacy? Oh, yeah. Anybody here use Google? Have an Android phone? iPhone? Yeah. So it's unfortunate today that as hard as we fight, we pretty much have surrendered, like it or not, and our privacy has been totally violated. And Facebook is, you know, in the news today. So many things going on, and they're taking us for granted. They're lying to us about terms and conditions. And, you know, there are some things you can do, but as we do the things that make us protected, it seems that they're always trying to find a way around that. And then one of the big issues of recent is that we have this issue with net neutrality and the government that's not helping us very much with, you know, protecting ourselves. You know, telemarketers. There are laws on the books about you're not supposed to do robocalls, you're not supposed to send spam over fax, you're not supposed to do a lot of things, and they do it anyways. There's a do not call list. How many of you are on the do not call list? And how many of you are on the do not call list that still get bombarded with phone calls? See? So I think too often there are these checklists. There's a politician who says, I'm working for you and I passed a law on, you know, do not call list. Yeah, but it doesn't work, you know, and there's no enforcement. So they do sometimes catch people and they do sometimes send people to jail. But it's so rare. It's so rare. There was a case where, and it seems that the news people have better luck than the law enforcement people. And so there was a news program where they were tracing, you know, some porn thing that was going on with spam and all kinds of other stuff. And, you know, kids were getting access to things that we don't want kids to have access to. And the police weren't doing enough. So a news team went to the other side of the world and tracked down some guy. And it was really a lot of work when they explained the whole thing where they went to a home, they found out that it was, you know, a fake address, and they went somewhere else. They finally tracked him down in a restaurant where he was having dinner. And a whole camera crew went in there and put the mic in his face and started asking him questions. And, of course, his response was, I don't care. And that's unfortunate because the penalties are not severe enough. So first of all, we've got laws that aren't being enforced. We're not really spending time going after people. And when we catch them, they don't really do that much. So we're finding there's a lot of things now. What was something I was thinking about? They're going after people today who are getting like free TV. Does anybody know what Kodi is? Okay, so streaming TV. So there's a lot of options today for getting entertainment. It used to be that you had the rabbit ears and you got like three or five channels, and then we came out with cable TV and satellite TV. Now we're doing streaming TV, YouTube. There's lots of ways to get entertainment. And all of these things are presenting opportunities for businesses to make money by selling us services that we want. Unfortunately, it also makes opportunities for the scammers. And they're going after people who are downloading movies that aren't paying for. And so, you know, the short answer about that is, that, okay, well, they're not paying for it. These are pirated. So they're basically violating copyright laws, right? Okay, well, we got people who are violating laws about privacy. Why aren't we going after them? So it's the whole thing goes back down to money. Money talks. Money is what it's all about. So if there was money for somebody to go after the scammers and the telemarketers, I think there would be more activity chasing and prosecuting. So maybe we need somehow to privatize this, that we give authority to private entities to actually go and chase these people and make some money off of it. That might incentivize people.
Bounty hunters.
Bounty hunters, exactly. Yes, exactly. Question in the back? We got a microphone for
all
you.
Of these. It's. The fiasco that we're hearing about Facebook right now in the news. We talk about how there's no enforcement of any of these privacy laws, but can any of these? I mean, what's your feeling? You're not a lawyer, I know, but can any of the people that were violated by Facebook's leaking this information be sued civilly?
So the question is, people who have been violated, if the government and other government-based entities aren't going after people, can they be sued in civil court? That's a really touchy subject. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And it takes a lot of money and resources. So if I got really mad, wanted to prosecute, I don't have the resources or the time or the patience. But if I get everybody in this room to sign a petition, we would send that to somebody. Who would you start with? Probably your local politicians. And then you would, you know, try and go further and further. If we wanted to take legal action, we would file a class action lawsuit. And so there's a lot of that that's starting to go on right now. I don't know if that's how this whole Facebook thing started, but in fact, one thing that I think is interesting about the whole Facebook problem is it seemed like nobody was really giving a hoot about what was going on until they started doing all this investigating about the election and people tampering with the election. Now all of a sudden they're concerned because a lot of people are upset about the way the election went. And we got a lot of whining crybabies who are, you know, I don't like the way things are done. And so all of a sudden now they're looking at Facebook. If that didn't happen, maybe we wouldn't even be looking at Facebook. All of a sudden we're talking about it. Why? You know? So it's interesting how it becomes the flavor of the month if there's enough noise about it by the right people. And it's unfortunate there's a lot of other things that are going on that are, I think, far more important. They're not getting enough attention. So, okay, it looks like I'm operating now. I don't know why it took so long. Probably because just before I left at the end of the day, I was doing Windows updates, and it was probably still finishing. And, wow, now I need an update. Yeah, now I need an update. Oh, is it slow? Okay, that might be. Okay, so we'll see how that goes. What I'd like to do with the internet, if things go well, is to show you a demonstration of using the VPN and maybe even on a mobile phone. And we'll see how that works out. So, okay, on with the show. Okay, here's an eye chart for people in the back. And basically, it just talks about things we were just talking about. You know, you are supposed to be in control of your privacy and your data, what's going on. You have a responsibility then to yourself to figure out how to do that. And it's very sad that by default, a lot of things are turned on that violate what you would desire to do. And in order for you to figure out how to change those settings to more private, more secure, It's like going back to college. I mean, this stuff is pretty complex sometimes. And they intentionally make things vague, and they hide them. They make you click, 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 and go to buried little menus. So it's a big challenge. So hopefully with things like what we're doing now, we can help with that. But there are a lot of YouTube videos. There are a lot of things on the internet. You can always follow up and do more of this. And I also want to point out that in order to be secure, there's not one thing to do. And people often ask me, well, I don't want to do all that stuff. Just tell me the one thing that's the most secure. You know, there is no one thing. You really need to do a lot of stuff. And it's really unfortunate. It puts a heavy burden on the user. And this is where I would love to see the FTC or the FCC or the whoever they are, you know, the EIO committee or whatever. They should make things so that things are in plain English. We don't have 6 pages of fine print. And that by default, everything is set in the most private mode possible. I would love that. But it's not going to happen. Now, there's a benefit. I do want to point out that sometimes we take these things for granted. We don't understand how they work. And the company forces them down our throat. And we think, well, this is all bad stuff. There are some good things about it. So I want to mention a thing about crowdsourcing. And so if I wrote an app that was how to get directions from my house to here, okay, I would want to look up on Google Maps and then apply directions from point A to point B. And then tell people how long it's going to take to get there. And hey, there's an accident. You need to take a detour, get off the road here and go somewhere else. Well, how does your cell phone that's giving you Google directions know there's an accident or know how long it's going to take? It gets feedback from all the users. So when I run the Google Maps on my phone, it's broadcasting back data telling Google that there's a traffic delay, there's an accident, there's weather conditions, something like that. So every user then becomes input to the system. And they refer to that as crowdsourcing, because the source of the data comes from the crowd of all the people that are users and logged in. So that's a benefit. There's a lot of times you'll be wondering why the phone needs permission to do, connecting to your contacts and your GPS and various other resources on your phone. It's not obvious all the time, but sometimes, and I don't know percentage-wise, but sometimes there's a valid reason that the phone does what it does. And other times it's not very valid. So, okay, so I already mentioned what we were booting up here, what we're going to be talking about. I'm going to point out a few programs. People always ask me, what's the best one to get? What's the cheapest one to get? And right now, VPN is very new, and it's a changing landscape. So I'll give you a few tips on what you might want to try. But if you ask me that question again in 6 months, it may be a totally different answer. Everybody knows how fast technology changes, right? It's hard to keep up with. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about the full security scheme, but if I spend too much time talking about everything, we won't get enough time for VPN. So I'll throw in some little bits and pieces, but I need to stay focused on VPN because this is kind of a lot of material as it is. There's a thing called AAA security. This is what is used in the business world, and as private users, we want to borrow some of the less complicated parts of what corporations do. It didn't used to be this way, but we need to be just as concerned as a corporation, because the information that we have about our finances and our family and our health and whatever information you have on your computer, it's your business. You should protect it. So maybe a company thinks that they're more important, but my opinion, I'm more important, and that's the way you should treat this. Okay, so who should be using VPN? This is important so that we don't get kind of branched off into distracting things. Essentially, this is something that everybody could use. It may not be something that everybody should use, depending on your computing habits. And I want to point out in the slides what we're going to do about protecting yourself in some of the more vulnerable environments, like coffee shops. So you may think, well, I don't really bring my computer to a coffee shop. You bring your smartphone? Smartphone's probably in your pocket or purse, and you take it everywhere. So right there, you're vulnerable everywhere you go. And you might say, well, I don't really go to coffee shops. I don't use their Wi-Fi. Well, unfortunately, phones and computers are often set by default to turn everything on. And the person sitting next to you might be connecting to your phone, and who knows what they're doing. So it's a very scary thing when you think about all the options. And I'm going to help you with some of this, but there's a lot more to it than this. So first of all, everybody should be doing Windows updates. Your computer and all the software that you run need to be up to date. That's the best defense you could do. If you have a very old computer with very old software, you need to either update everything, or if it's so old that you can't, you need to consider maybe getting a new device. So if you're running Windows XP or Windows 2000 or Windows Vista, the best advice I could tell you is get rid of it, because those are not safe operating systems. You may think you're saving money because, hey, it works fine for me. But it's been proven There are so many vulnerabilities in those older operating systems. You are at risk every time you get on the internet, every time you do anything. So you keep them up to date, you do the Windows update, and then every program that you run, whatever you buy and install on a computer or whatever was provided by the manufacturer where you bought your computer, everything probably gets updates, and maybe automatically, or maybe you have to go and download and install. So you really kind of have to do some diligence there to look at the programs around your computer and decide if they're updating by themselves or if you have to go out there and do some updates. You may have heard that Java's not safe, Flash is not safe, and you get little pop-up boxes on your computer all the time. An update is available. Click here. That's a scary thing because sometimes those are valid. Other times, those are things that are coming from bad people, and they want you to click. Clicking is one of the big dangers, and it's really hard, even for myself. I spend a lot of time on computers. I've seen a lot of tricks. I've been tricked by a few. There's a software program for security called a firewall. So your security software that maybe you're most familiar with is anti-spam. Now we've got even more than it. You've got cookies and you've got advertising. You've got all these other things. So your security software has pretty much branched into many other things to try and take care of adware and malware, phishing schemes, these types of things. And the firewall is... it is basically trying to put up a wall and not let things come from the outside into your computer. So the theory is with accessing things on the internet is that your computer should make a request and things on the internet should only respond to your request. If you didn't request it, it shouldn't come in. And that's what a firewall does. It monitors only the data that you request that should be coming back. It's very effective, but it's not 100% foolproof. So you should be running a router in your house that has firewall on it. So I'm sure most of the people in here have some type of broadband. Cable modem, DSL modem, something like that. Anybody still using dial-up modems? Yeah, sometimes. So you probably have a box that's a cable modem and then maybe another box that's a router, or sometimes they're built together. And you need to make sure that that device is kept up to date, because it has a lot of security stuff in it. But you don't have to worry about that because your cable company is going to take care of it. Those things automatically update without you even having to do anything about it. Sorry?
I said
they own
mine. It's their responsibility.
Yeah.
I have no way of knowing.
Right. And it's kind of nice that they make it transparent so you don't have to do anything. But then again, because you're not notified, you kind of wonder, you know. If you have a very old router, The technology used in your wireless, in your routers, has changed quite a bit. So if your router is more than, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago old, 5 years at least, might be time for a new router because they're not updating the old routers anymore. Let's see. Okay. The difference between public and private networks. This is important. So if you're at your house, and you're getting internet from your service provider, but it's only you that should be on your network. That's considered a private network. But if you go to a library, if you go to a coffee shop, you come in here, if you're on a shared network, that's public. That means that the restrictions of use are kind of loose. That's the whole thing about, you know, going to a coffee shop and connecting to Wi-Fi. It's very open. If there's no password required, you just go in, you look for a Starbucks, and you connect to it, and it doesn't ask you for a password, that's public, without question. And it's an open public, because it doesn't have any password. What you may find is if you click on the Starbucks, before you can do anything, a window will pop and says, a window will pop up and say to you that you need to agree to terms and conditions before you can use this. That's a capture portal, and it's basically their legal way of pushing a screen in front of you and saying, we have no responsibility. It's all up to you. It's on you now. If you do something or something happens to you, we're not liable. That's different. Okay, so understand the difference in those. As I mentioned earlier, this is the slide that addresses the FCC and the FTC and the EIAO and whoever they are. We can't count on the government. And I don't know what's going on with this Congress, but they just repealed the net neutrality, and there were a couple of other things they did that just pretty much opened up the internet to be, you know, kind of a shooting gallery. And this is one of the things that it goes back to scams as well as advertising abuse. And so your internet provider has the ability now to monitor everything you're doing and use it for whatever purposes they deem necessary. And they can resell it to other third parties, and those third parties can do whatever they want with it. To me, this is not right. It's my dad, it's my life. I should have a say-so in this. And by the way, if you're going to be doing this anyways, and you're making money off it, then I should get something for it. Stop raising my cable price and getting all my privacy. If you're going to take my privacy, then give me a discount. So, but you know that'll never happen either, right? So, let's see. The last line there. Permissions to steal our data should not be a requirement of service. And this is one of the other unfortunate things. Like the pop-up window that says, you agree to these terms. This is how they get away with everything. They make you click on something that if you really want to read it, it's 64 pages of fine print. And you have to scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. And it's very legal-like. So it's not meant for common everyday people. And so you click. In fact, we blindly start clicking, yes, 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 agree, agree. You know, we don't even read it anymore. So if something ever does happen, they say, well, you agreed to the terms. Well, I didn't really. Well, but you're using the product, that means you agree. And it's sad. So this is where I'd recommend to people, don't try to understand everything, but try to be aware of what you're doing and what the consequences are. Do what you can, the best that you can. Yeah, and I deal with that all the time. So the questions about using something, even if you don't agree with it, but you want the benefits of that product. Is that right?
No, you have no choice.
You really don't. It's either you use it by accepting their terms, like it or not,
yeah.
Or you say, no, I don't agree, and you don't use it.
Yeah, well, normally if you accept it, then you can't sue them either, because usually somewhere there's that little rider there that you have to go to arbitration, and they pick the arbitrators. So the arbitrators, in order to keep that business, you know who they're going to favor.
Yeah, and now they're doing something that I hate even worse. They're saying in the terms that you cannot file a class action lawsuit against them. To me, I don't understand how that could even be legal. But that's another one of those fine print terms that I bet no one's read that one yet. Ah, okay. So we're going to get a little bit more into how this works and why you have to worry about things. Maybe I can... There you go. You see a little better? Okay. So, we've got two users that are trying to communicate to each other. But something happens where the communication, the direct communication between the two, doesn't work. It's been interrupted. How's that been interrupted? Well, the computer down below. So computer user one thinks he's talking to computer user number two, and computer user two thinks she's talking to computer user one. But what's happened here is somebody has pretended to be the path of data. And they call us a man in the middle because now somebody has put themselves, they've inserted themselves into the middle between two communication nodes. This is what happens a lot at coffee shops. You go looking for Starbucks, and maybe you see Starbucks 1, Starbucks 2, Starbucks 3, and you figure, okay, well, I'll take the strongest one, and you click on it. Well, maybe Starbucks 2 and 3 are not valid. Only Starbucks 1 might be valid. Starbucks 2 might be this guy, Fakin. And so he relays your information to the internet, and what information comes back goes to your computer. It might be a little slower because he's looking at your data, but you think, hey, okay, it's working, and you're none the wiser. Meanwhile, he could be recording everything so he can go look at it later. He's looking for passwords, looking for bank account numbers, that kind of thing. So if you go to Starbucks, ask them the right way to connect. If you're at a hotel and you're trying to connect to the internet, ask or read. There's usually brochures at the hotels that will tell you what to connect to. you're not sure, ask somebody. So it's all ones and zeros, right? This is digital data. And very few people can look at the data and understand what's in there. You need tools to decode all the ones and zeros. And there's a tool called a packet sniffer. And this is what records all of the data that comes across the network, and it tries to decrypt it into human meaningful information. These tools are pretty readily available and they're free. So it really doesn't take much for somebody to set themselves up in a coffee shop and start sniffing data. Ooh, we're going to talk about that. HTTPS is a way to securely encrypt some of the information. So we'll talk a little bit about that pretty soon. Okay, so this is a typical use of Wireshark. You see up here, Wireshark. This is an IP packet sniffer, and it's available free for download. There used to be tools like this that were $3,000 to $5,000, and they were only used by professional programmers and companies. Now this is free, and anybody can get it. And it's pretty easy to use. So all these ones and zeros come in. You can see some of the information down below. These are part of the protocols. And the protocol says, this packet means this, and this packet means that, and this bit means this, and this bit means that. And that's what this program does, is it automatically decodes that for you. So what you can see is it goes through and it finds HTTP, which is Hypertext Transfer Protocol. This is what they use on the web. If you look at your address bar, it always starts with http://:, and then the rest of it, right? So it's decoding this, and it's pulling information out here and displaying it. But if we look at this box up on the top, this is what the guy who's the man in the middle is looking for. He sees username and password. So the way things were done in the old days, if you go far enough back, we didn't really worry much about people because it was very difficult to do, it was expensive to do, and there were very few people that were actually out there trying to take advantage of people. But that quickly changed, and especially today with all the open source tools that are free, you can download almost anything, and anybody could become a crook. And it's sometimes college kids do this just for gamemanship, to show off to their friends. Sometimes those kids grow up to be crooks. So sometimes the passwords are in what we call clear text, where you can decode them this way and you can read them. But a lot of times now, passwords are being done encrypted. So it depends on the program you're using, and you have no idea. So you really have to assume that somewhere in that information could be your username and password, maybe your bank account, your phone number, credit cards, that type of information. Some programs still do that. Okay, so this slide basically is trying to tell you that it doesn't matter what you're using. How many people in here are Macintosh users? Macintosh computers? Yeah? iPhones? Do you guys think you're safe? Oh, I heard some good answers. Slightly better. Okay. There were lots of people that were under the impression that, oh, I'm just going to get a Mac because they don't get viruses. I have a friend who wrote some of the first virus programs for Macintosh. And he did this, so I don't know. It was I met him in 2006, and he had already written that program. So it's something that's been around for a long time. It doesn't matter what computer you're using: Linux, Windows, Mac, Android phones, iPhones. There are ways that you can hack into any of these things. Now we have to worry, as if it isn't bad enough with computers and phones, even your television, your dishwasher, and your toaster, and all these things. Internet of Things, have you heard that? They're attaching all your devices now to the computer. And I've got a lot of really great stuff in my house that I think is a lot of fun. I can turn the lights on, I can talk to it, I can see what's going on, I can open my garage and, you know, different things like that. But it makes me vulnerable. And it's scary because we know there's bad people out there. And fun comes at a price, sadly. So any device is vulnerable. You only have so much control. If you really don't want to be vulnerable, you have to dig a hole and hide in it and don't use any technology. And it's not fun. So the more technology we have, the more vulnerable we become. Sad but true. So one of the ways that information over wireless has been improved is a thing they call WPA, and now they're on version 2. That's wireless protected, I'm sorry, I forget what it stands for now. But it encrypts the information. So if you're connecting to something wirelessly, this is almost everywhere, except open networks. So this is when we say open network. Open network means it's not encrypted. So if you go to a library or a hotel and they give you an open network, and all you need is the ID that identifies that wireless network and no password, that's bad because it's not encrypted. So you always want encrypted if you have the option. And the other is SSL. And this stands for Secure Sockets Layer. And this sockets layer is something has to do with the TCP/IP stack. It's a technical thing in the protocol. But the important part of this is secure. And by secure, it's supposed to be encrypting all your traffic. And for a long time, they were using a technology that required a supercomputer to crack. But the computers we have today, the phones that we have today, they're more powerful than the supercomputers of, you know, the 90s, maybe even more recent. So it's not that difficult, and they've come up with new ways. It's kind of a race that as the criminals catch up, all the technology experts are trying to stay a few steps ahead. So what's really confusing then is when you go to configure, you're going to have too many options because not only do you have the new options, but you've got the old options. And it's kind of a challenge, but things are getting better. Bluetooth even, when you connect to your devices over Bluetooth, you connect to the car to do a speakerphone on the car. You connect to what kind of things would you do at home? A mouse and a keyboard could be wireless Bluetooth, headsets, that kind of thing. There's a virus, a hack that goes into Bluetooth. It's called the Blueborne. It's a vulnerability. Okay, so I should explain that. Sometimes when the programmers write the software for the devices, they try to do the best job they can to prevent hacking, but criminals will find if I do this first and then I do that and then I go back and do this other thing again, all of a sudden I get access. And it's really hard for programmers to test. So these are vulnerabilities. They're vulnerable because they're vulnerable to hacking. So if you hear about a vulnerability that requires an update on your phone or something, you know, be sure you get that update for that. So, Joe, what can we do? All right. So this is where a VPN is going to help us in some situations. And it's going to do some encrypting of some of the information that you use, specifically the information that goes from your device to the internet and back. I'm going to try and explain how it does that, and that's really the whole, you know, the big thing about VPN, and I hope it doesn't get too tunnel. I hope it doesn't get too technical. It relies on a principle we refer to as tunneling. So, let's see, I should have a slide coming up to... All right, I don't want to spend too much time on the AAA part of it, but AAA and cryptography and encryption and protocols, these are all the basis of what makes your computer secure, one way or another. And VPN uses all of these things. So it also uses a thing about public keys, private keys, and certificates. Have any of you gotten an error message or a pop-up on your computer that says your certificate is expired? You know, you may have seen that. You're like, what the heck does that mean? So this is how you get authentication from a source that's supposed to be an authority on security. They call it a CA, a certificate authority. Issues these certificates that basically says, this person wants to claim that this is who they are, and we're certifying that's who they are. Kind of like your driver's license and your security, your social security card. There are ways to sometimes hack those things, but this is the principle. Okay, I'm just going to go through a couple things real quick here. authentication and authorization and accounting. So you want to authenticate the user. That user is trying to be identified, and there's a procedure and a protocol that does the authentication. So that's proving that the user is who they are. Then there's authorization. So once you've validated who the user is, does that user have permission to gain access? So if you're the owner of the computer and you log in with your credentials, you should be authenticated by your login, and your computer should authorize you to do things on a computer. But if somebody else tries to access your computer, it should say, no, sorry, you're not this user. Or if you're a different user, you can read information, but you can't write information. So that's the difference between authentication and authorization. Then there's accounting. And this is more about what they do in a business environment. They log everything. But sometimes you may get information on your computer or from your antivirus software, and it'll tell you there's information in the log that you need to look at. This is where it tries to record events that happen, security events, intrusion events. So we probably didn't have to worry about that in the early 2000s and the 90s. But today there's so much going on that if you ever need to debug a security problem and you get somebody who is a technician good in security, he's going to look at your logs, basically. So it's a little bit on the technical side. I don't want you to think you have to know that. I'm just giving you an explanation in case you've seen these terms. All right, let's see if we can talk about a little bit how this works. This is where it really gets fun, but it also gets very technical. So Dave and Alice want to send messages back and forth to each other, but they want them to be private. They want them encrypted. How do we do an encrypting? Well, everything is a set of bits. So if we start flipping the bits around, scramble them up, then anybody that intercepts the information is just going to see scrambled bits. But if we're going to send this to somebody, that person has to descramble in order to be able to read the message. So the sender and the receiver have to use the same algorithm to first of all encrypt it and then decrypt it. And so if you've got two people in the same room and you can write on a sticky note and hand it to somebody, well, that's pretty easy. But when they're on the other side of the world, you know, how do you get them that sticky note? And this is where the protocols come in. So Dave wants to send a message to Alice. And the data needs to be obscured using encryption so that it no longer makes sense. It's going to be gobbledygook. And so he's going to use a key. This key is a numerical value. And this numerical value comes from the certificate. So I mentioned the certificate earlier. This is the role of the certificate, is there's a magic number inside the certificate. So that key is going to be used in an algorithm to scramble up these numbers and letters and whatever's in the message. And that scrambled message gets sent. And then because of the protocol and certificates, Alice's computer, actually, knows how to decrypt.
Doesn't he use the private key to encrypt?
Well, yes. So there are different mechanisms going on, and I really think I need to adjust this, that on the left should be the private key. Right, public?
Yeah, the
private. This is where it gets really confusing. It depends on the scenario that I'm trying to use. And I took some classes like in 2000. So it's very complicated, and I really don't want you to become experts on this. I just want to explain the theory behind it.
See,
it depends on who's actually requesting the information. So, but maybe if Alice requested the information, then that would determine the public and the private. And I really need to make some footnotes on here because I actually forget what my intention was on the scenario here. But it's very keen of you to point that out. It's very important that only one person can have the private key. And that's why they call it private. So if I'm talking to all of you, and I want all of you to be able to decrypt my messages, I have to keep my private key very, very secure and private. But publicly, I give you all my public key. Other people can actually have my public key, but if they don't have the protocol and the certificates, they still can't decrypt it. So it's a very complicated system. It's very math-based. And this is, you know, way beyond our ability to discuss in this kind of a situation. So have you heard of TCP/IP? It's a protocol suite used for communication, transmission control protocol, and internet protocol. And when we talk about internet protocol and internet working and the internet, if we go back to when all of this was invented, Bell Labs and Department of Defense and all of that, they had some universities and some research labs that wanted to send information back and forth, and they started developing what eventually became the internet. And so if you had several computers in an office, they could put them on a network, but because all they needed to do was to communicate to each other, it was a very simple communication protocol. But once those computers wanted to communicate to somebody else far away in another network, they had to have internetworking protocol. That's the IP part, and that's where internet comes from, because you're doing networking between, right, internet. So that's where internet comes from. Web actually came later by somebody who invented the protocol that does what we call hypertext. This is the HTTP. So the internet and the web technically are different, but we just kind of use them interchangeably. So what's important here is that there are lots of alphabet protocols. You don't need to know them because it's all done in the background. But, you know, again, you may see messages popping up on your computer. When you try to connect to a network, you may get, you know, error messages or something. It'll spit out some gobbledygook with protocol, you know, whatever it is. If somebody's helping you with your computer to fix a problem, they would need to know this. But you, as a user, typically don't need to worry about this kind of stuff. So sometimes I talk to groups where they're all technical people. They're all, you know, college-age geeks or programmers and that kind of thing. So I don't think there's many people in here that really want to go into the protocol stuff, right? But what I do want to point out is there's more than one way to skin a cat here. And as technology improved over the years, and as the crooks got more crooked, we had to come up with better ways to defend ourselves. And so there's a lot of protocols. If you try to set up your own VPN, it's extremely complicated. But today what's made VPN very popular is there are services that set this up for us, and we don't have to worry about it. I mean, it is very, very complicated to get this to work. So we were asking about HTTPS. This is the secure part of doing the web. So if you're on your computer and you're trying to find files that exist on your computer, on your hard drive, you might, if you're using Windows, they call it a file explorer. In Macintosh, what do they call it? Finder or something? Right? Okay. That's only for finding things that are local on your computer. But what if you want to go to something that's beyond your computer or on the internet? The program used for doing that is called a browser. So it's very much the same thing, but it has a very different functionality and it works very different. So they had to invent a new name. They call it a browser. So if somebody says open your browser, that's going to be like Firefox, Internet Explorer, who? Safari. Right. So there's 20 or 30 or 50. Chrome is a very popular one. Those are browsers. So when you open up your browser, there's an address bar at the top. You know, where do you want to go today? You want to go to google.com or costco.com. And you type that in the address bar and off you go. What you want to look for now is it'll usually give you a green lettering in the left side of that address bar and a little lock where the shackle of the lock has been closed. That's to tell you it's secure. And the way that it does that, it goes back to certificates. So we talked about before having certificates. If we went to google.com and it turned green with a closed lock, that's because Google has paid to get certificates that proves that when you go to google.com, that is the authentic Google website. So that's what it's supposed to be telling you. So if you go to google.com, or you think you went to google.com and you don't have the little padlock, maybe you typed it wrong. That happens a lot, right? Anybody ever type in something wrong? It's frustrating. How did I get here? And it doesn't look right. Well, the crooks know that you might spell Costco with two T's, for example. Lots of different ways you can make typos. So somebody will go out there and create a website, www.costco.com with two T's. And they'll maybe make it look like the Costco website. And they'll have products that you can buy. And you think, oh, I wanted to go buy that TV that's $850 plus tax. And you click on it, and you go and you place your order and enter your credit card information. And then nothing happens. You never get your TV. Maybe you weren't on the authentic Costco.com. So you really should have the habit of checking. If you're going to do anything that involves giving your credit card, logging in somewhere, banking, any of your social media, any of the things that you do, look for this little lock in the corner. That means it's using HTTPS. That's the secure way of doing browsing. It depends on the browser, but I think today the de facto standard is it will turn green. But each browser may do it. Sometimes the entire address will be green, and that depends. Yeah, it depends on the browser. So look for green, look for the little lock, look for HTTPS. Those are all clues that you're being encrypted and you're secure. But remember, that only applies to that website in that particular window of that browser. So if you're doing something else that doesn't go through that browser, that's not being encrypted. So for example, if you have an app that you open to do your Twitter or Facebook, and then you open up a browser to go to, Costco.com, those are two different types of activities, two different sets of traffic. So the browser is going to take care of your Costco.com, but if you're using an app for something else like Facebook, it's the Facebook app that has to give you security. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because yes, HTTPS helps a lot, but it doesn't really solve all the problems. Okay, so see if you can follow along with this. I've got three scenarios here that explain. So we've kind of done the foundation work to explain some terminology and how this works. But let's do it by a diagram. This particular scenario here is what corporations would do with VPN. And this is really where VPN came from. So if you had two locations in a company, one here in California, one in New York, for example, and you wanted those two to communicate to each other, and all your important company data and your financial reports and everything go across the internet, you want those encrypted. And the way to do that is to create one of these virtual tunnels using VPN. So we have to talk about endpoints. And so we've got the VPN client is one endpoint, and we've got a VPN server that is the other endpoint. And what I mean by endpoint is they're the two devices that want to talk to each other securely, right? You got one end, you've got the other end. So we just call them endpoints. Doesn't matter which one's first or second or which one's left or right. They're both endpoints, right? So there's a server in this company that is running the VPN protocol, and we need to connect to that to be secure. So let's say in this case, the VPN client could be another division in a different location, another state or another city, or it could be somebody who works from home, which is happening a lot today, right? People get a job, but they work from home. So they refer to it as a teleworker. So in this case, let's say we're talking about a teleworker that works from home. He just logs in, and he connects to the company network, and he does his work. Well, the company doesn't want that guy to become a problem for security. So he has to use VPN to be encrypted. So he runs a VPN client on his devices that connect to the VPN server. And between those two, between those two endpoints, we create this tunnel that effectively makes the data between those two endpoints become unique. Now, the thing about the internet, all the data, once it gets onto the internet, is accessible anywhere on the internet. The internet itself is a public network. But what we're trying here to do is we're trying to pretend as if we have a direct connection that nobody else can see. It's not really that way, but virtually that's what we're trying to achieve. So this is what we're doing. We're trying to create a virtual private tunnel between two endpoints. And that's what the name is trying to imply. Well, okay, in the case of a firewall, which you should be running on your computer, yeah. So in this case, there's lots of different ways this could be done. In a corporation, they run usually a firewall server and a web server and a VPN server. And in this scenario, we're going directly into a VPN server. But the VPN server is going to have firewall protection as well. So now, in this case, if it was some third party, it wasn't an employee who was out on the internet and trying to get into the network, he would be trying to go, the firewall would be blocking. This is the public way for other people to access the internet. Question? Yeah, I just looked at the clock too. What time do we wrap up? Oh, 8:45? Okay. You, go ahead. Okay, maybe I started a little late here, but let me jump to, all right, so let's talk about the products, okay? And so I think at this point we've established that there's a lot of protocols and encryption and certificates and all that, and it gets very complicated. So what we want is for something that you could put onto your device, whether it's a computer or a handheld or whatever it is, that will take care of all this for us, to be transparent. If we have to log in and, you know, sign up for an account, that should be hopefully as complicated as anybody would want, right? So that's what we're going to look at. Today there's a bunch of new third-party programs that will do that for us. And I wonder, do I need to? No, let me skip that because if we have time, I'll come back. So if you go out on the internet and do a little bit of searching, looking for VPN programs, I do this every so often, and the landscape is changing. There's a lot of programs out there that cost money. There are programs that are free. There are some that are free to try, but after 30 days or after so much traffic, you have to pay. So I think everybody here would agree with me. If I can do something for free, I kind of like that idea, right? And there's a lot of free stuff out there today, so hey, you know, let's take a look. However, you have to say, if it's free and there's a lot of programs out there, is there a catch? And so there's a theory that says, if it's free, you are the product. Nothing is free. Somehow, they need to make their money, right? If I decided to go into business for myself and I got to pay rent and, you know, utility bills and everything else, and I'm going to give stuff away for free, pretty soon I'm going to be evicted, you know. So how can a company keep giving stuff away for free? Well, the way they try to make up the money is through ad revenue or by selling the collection of information that they get. So you may wind up getting pop-up ads, banners, different types of things like that. They're annoying, but hey, when you're getting something for free, that's one way to go. You got to be careful though. If they're going to say it's free and then the terms and conditions are 50 pages and you don't read them, you may find out that by clicking OK, you've agreed that they can resell your data. And what's the sense of using VPN for security if you're going to give all your information away? Sort of counterproductive, right? So I'm a little hesitant about anything that's free in security because, especially now, because all this stuff is pretty new. So let me show you a couple products, right? Containerization usually is more of a topic for programmers and developers. Unless you mean something different, we could talk about that later. But that's a different topic entirely. There's an internet browser out there called Opera. Anybody using Opera? Okay. So this is a free browser that you can download. It has VPN built into it. So here's one option. If all you need is secure browsing, you can get this and it's built right into it. Okay. Opera. O-P-O-E-R-A. O-P-E-R-A. Right? So I won't take the time because there's a lot of steps in here, but basically you go in and you enable, where are we at here? Browsing, private security, VPN. Here we go. You click that check mark and that turns on the VPN. You also want to put a check mark and block ads, and it will block advertising. Advertising is one of the ways where you give away a lot of information. And unfortunately, what website do you go to today that doesn't have advertising all over it? Videos that pop up and scrolling messages and everything. So this browser has a built-in ad blocker, and that's a nice feature because a lot of your vulnerabilities come from ads, even legitimate ones. They're stealing information, especially if you click. Okay, so here is, I'm running Kaspersky software. I've been a Norton fan for a long time. I think as long as you buy one of the top 3 to 5 big players, you're good. People keep saying, hey, what's the best one on the market? You know what? This year it will be Norton. Next year will be Kaspersky. Next year will be a Bitdefender. You know, just buy one of the top 3 to 5 and you should be good to go. And this is an example is they're putting VPN into these programs, but it's sort of the free trial teaser. You can do a little bit of this for free, but then you're going to start getting pop-up banners that say, oh, now you have to pay. So I don't use Kaspersky VPN because it's a little bit pricey. But I want to point out the list on the right side. These are what they call exit nodes. And so if I turn on VPN on my computer, what it allows me to do, I can select one of these. I can pretend I'm actually coming from Denmark or from Japan or something like that. So there's a thing called geofencing. Some countries, like China, if you are in China, they don't want you to do bad things according to the Chinese government. Don't say bad things about the government. Don't look at things they don't want you to look at. So they do geofencing. If you're accessing the internet from within China, they're blocking your accessibility to certain content. But if you do something like this, pretend you're in another country, you've just gotten around the geofencing. Another thing, like say you have a YouTube account, but maybe, you know, right here in the United States, you're doing American movies on a United States subscription from YouTube. But maybe you speak another language, you'd like to get movies from some other place in the world. Okay, go over here, pretend you're from some other country, you get YouTube from that country. Although YouTube's gotten wise to this, and I think they're blocking now some of this. So that's one of the benefits of VPN. Here's a couple of prices. It could be anywhere from like $3, $4, $5 at the low end per month.
Don't worry that they're Russian.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into the whole thing about politics, but no, I'm not concerned about Kaspersky or any of this stuff. I think it's overblown. I think we got far worse things going on in this country than Kaspersky. Okay, Avast. Anybody here using Avast? Okay, Avast is free software, but it's free up to a limit, and then they want you to pay for the advanced features, right? One of the advanced features is they have what they call SecureLine VPN, and that's their VPN service. And that runs, like $5 a month, down to as low as like $2 a month, but look at the restrictions. Depends on how many devices and how much data. So this is the thing is, you're sending your data now through their servers. The more data you use, the more you should pay. And this is very hard for you to estimate, so you kind of start out with one plan, and then if it's not enough, you upgrade to another plan. So I'll make a recommendation of a good starting point, because it's pretty confusing. See, this slide just lots of numbers of how many billions of people are getting hacked and viruses. But on the left side, Here's a few that I notice are popping up frequently when I do searches on the internet for VPN services. And the one at the top, PIA, that's Private Internet Access, that's the one I'm using right now. You can get it for about $3 or $4 a month. What do I have here? Yeah, I think I have it for $3.33 a month. And that's probably as cheap as I've seen it. So that's like $36-$40 a year. And it provides enough security for me that if you're looking for a place to start, that's the one I would start with. That's correct. So every device that you want to use for connecting to the internet, you would have to install that. And I don't have it listed here, but you would want to look at the website and see if they provide enough devices and bandwidth for you to find the PIA is what you need to do. So if you're a power user and you use a lot of stuff on the internet and you travel a lot, you might need a bigger package. But I think for most people, the basic PIA package for $3 a month, I think that's more than sufficient.
How do you know they're not stealing your data?
Good question. How do you know? Okay. So we kind of skipped one scenario that explains how this works. So my computer wants to connect to the internet and I want it to be secure. What this does is it simplifies all of that mumbo-jumbo and the diagrams, everything collapses to something very simple. I send data from my computer to a server in one of those countries, whatever country I pick, right? And it sets up encrypted tunneling from this node to the other node. That's the two endpoints. So that means everything that I'm doing now goes through that other server. So to answer your question, how do I know what they're doing at that end of the tunnel? And so this is why I'm a little bit nervous about free programs because, hey, you want to get people to sign up for your service and take advantage of them, offer something free. Free coupons, free cartoons, free cute kitties, free jokes, free other things. And people will come in droves, right? So if it sounds too good to be true, it just might be. But the services that have been around for a long time, the ones that are getting good reviews, the ones that charge money, are the ones that I would stick with. They're more credible. So we don't really know because they could still be fooling us, right? But
I've seen them on the web for basically $20 a month.
Yeah, could be $20 even more.
So
right?
To me, it sounds like they're stealing
anyhow. Yeah, and I was very nervous too. But I read a lot of reviews and I met the people. And I was actually trying to get them to give me some codes to give you guys like free access or a free trial. But haven't got that feedback from them yet. But yes, so you select a country and they get the other side of your data. And you're sort of trusting that they are not doing bad things with your data. And that goes back to the people. There are people who actually test this stuff. There are labs that test it. And so by reading those reports, I feel pretty good that PIA is doing a good job.
Okay.
Question?
So this VPN, you don't need it in your own home where you have a secured network, only when you go to an open network, correct?
So I do want to address that, and I guess now is as good a time as any. I think I have a slide coming up for that. But the most important time is if you're on a public network, okay, like a hotel or a coffee shop or that type of thing. But even when you're at your house now, so going back to the slide where I brought up that the net neutrality has been kind of thrown away, that means that your service provider now has the ability to use everything that's in your traffic, no matter what it is, for their benefit. And the heck with your privacy. But if you do this, they can't see your data anymore. So you basically say, you know, we don't care.
Okay, so if I'm on my network at home and I want to use VPN, does it show up where you have all the networks, where are your neighbors and you pick that one? Is that how it shows up?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And so essentially then, while you're at home and you're browsing the internet, you may want to encrypt everything. But if you encrypt everything, that means all of your data has to be totaled up, and the way they charge you is kind of based on the amount of usage, how much data. And so if you encrypt everything, you may wind up getting excess charges. So you may want to decide that I'm only going to turn on the VPN when I'm doing things that I want to be really private. But if I'm going out looking for recipes, maybe I don't care so much. Yes, and that's the thing I'm looking for a slide here coming up.
Joe, the way I understand this, there are two components. One is the encryption, and one is the obscuration of the target address. So in your computer, you encrypt the message.
Are you on? I still
now,
can't hear.
The thing that's not encrypted is the address where
yes.
you want to go, the destination.
Right.
The service of the VPN is that when your message is sent to the VPN, it puts a new wrapper around the total message, including your destination address, and they put a different destination address, which is their exit point. At their exit point, they peel off their additional wrapper, and now from that point on, you go to your destination, but from that point on, you are just, you are not secure.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. So, this was some of the stuff I kind of skipped over. Was getting a little bit long, so I apologize for that. Essentially, what he was pointing out was, in the protocol that sends your information over the network, TCP/IP, we have to know where that information is headed to. So when we had was it Bob and Alice trying to send messages to each other, those two computers have IP addresses. In the message is, the first thing is a destination address. Where is that information headed to? The second thing is the source. Where did it come from? So when you send stuff out there, what this service does is it redirects, it changes information so that it now goes to Europe instead of, you know, down the street, right? And so the other point that he was making is that once you get to the point where your information goes out on the public internet, okay, so you sent your data around the other side of the world, but at some point, are you getting to the internet again? Instead of doing Netflix in the U.S., now you're doing Netflix over there. So after it leaves that exit point in the other country, you could be vulnerable to the internet over there. So what it does for you is anybody that's in between, this man in the middle stuff, this prevents the man in the middle. That's the biggest thing this does. So when you're in a public network, public wireless network specifically, is the best application for this. You're trying to keep people from snooping and looking at your traffic. But it's not 100% foolproof. And I got some more slides coming up here, but I see we're running out of time, so let me skate forward here. Okay, is everything encrypted? So this is where we would have talked about that. Because these exit servers in other countries are part of these services, their IP addresses are becoming known. So if you have cable service from Cox and you send information trying to bypass Cox and go to one of these exit points in another country using your VPN service, because of the addresses that they can see, they can't read your message, but they know where your message is headed. Because we've let net neutrality kind of like go to the wayside, they could say, sorry, we're going to block your VPN traffic. This is a really, really bad thing. So we have a tool that can help us, but because they've dissolved net neutrality, they might start blocking VPN traffic. So this is a very scary thing. What else can we talk about? Oh, so that's where your ISP sees the destination and source IP address, okay? Cookies and web beacons. So we skipped over that real quickly. When you go to a website, your computer tries to do things on your behalf that make your activity more productive and friendly. They call this the user experience. You know, we're trying to improve the user experience. Microsoft puts all these new fancy features in there to enhance the experience of the user. What does that mean? Well, it's a kind of a catch-all phrase. It does a lot of things. And the way that some of the information is stored is in cookies. So if you go to your bank and you log in with your credentials, it saves this login information in a cookie. And the cookie is encrypted in a way that it's supposed to be secure, right? But sometimes they use these cookies to store information about your shopping habits, where you go when you leave one website, go to another website, and you come back. They track you. So cookies are one of the mechanisms for giving up some of your privacy. Question?
Most of our members are supposed to be using Sandbox, which is a virtual... Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
Okay. Most of us are supposed to be using that. So that helps us because there's no way for cookies to be planted, in theory. The other thing we're supposed to also be doing, I would like to remind the members here, is we have a user and a manager, and the manager is supposed to protect us from having anything planted on our computer, any program. So we have to give it an okay anytime a program coming from the outside it tries to install itself.
It
has to ask us for permission, huh?
What type of a manager?
What's it, Jim?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're the one that put this on our computers. The manager level, we have a user level and a manager level on our computers. An administrator level, not manager, an administrative level.
So let me throw in some comments to sort of incorporate what you're talking about and how that works. If you do private browsing, this is one of the things we had to kind of skip over on one of the slides. By setting up private browsing, it tries to set up what we would refer to as a sandbox. And basically all the activity that you're doing at the time that you're browsing that current session until you close everything up. While you're browsing, it has to save cookies. So you will always be saving cookies. You can disable cookies, but I guarantee it will drive you nuts with pop-up boxes. Website won't let you go anywhere. It's impossible to not have cookies these days. But, you know, you go to Macy's.com and you want to look at shoes, see what's on sale or something, right? Okay, it's going to track what web page you started with, how many times you clicked, all the different pages you went. And they basically want to collect that information to say, hey, Joe's been looking at shoes. Next thing you know, tomorrow I'm getting information in my inbox about shoes that are on sale. Okay, maybe I want that, maybe I don't. I don't know. But this is where the cookies come in, is they're trying to keep track of all the things I'm doing. But what you don't want is for Sears or Target to get the Macy's cookies and find out what I've been doing on Macy's. So when you run in a sandbox or a private browser, the idea there is that when you close that browser, it deletes all that history. Nobody else can see it anymore. So if it's not there, they can't get it. And that's a very effective thing. So when you're done browsing, close all your windows. You want to clear the cache, clear the cookies. There's usually a feature somewhere that says clear all my history, and you want to clear all that. I also recommend do not save your passwords in the browser. So it makes it really easy to log in, and then the next day come back, and you don't have to log in again because it saved it in a cookie. This is really bad because somebody gets those cookies, they can log into your sites. So what you should be using is a password manager. Anybody here using a password manager already? Okay, good. So that's part of the total security. Again, it's not one thing. It's a lot of things that you need to do to keep yourself secure. What else do we have here? Okay, ads and banners. I think everybody knows what those are. Cookies and web beacons. Okay, I didn't talk about web beacons. It's like a cookie. And sometimes when you go to a website, it paints images, and you'll see pictures of shoes, if they were looking for that. You'll see the ads. And if it's visible, it's saving something to your computer in a cache, right? So there's this thing they call a web beacon. And it could be a one-by-one pixel. Makes it invisible. You can't even see it's on the screen. But it's like a cookie, but a special cookie. Because now we have cookie blockers and cookie managers and private browsing. So they came up with something else. They call them web beacons. And these web beacons are designed to do more about advertising than cookies. So cookies were meant for making your experience better, but then they got abused into hyper-advertising. Web beacons are really about advertising and collecting information. Analytics, what type of computer you're using, what kind of browser you're using. They like to collect all that information. So again, if you're using the right software, it will clear all this stuff for you and you won't have to worry about it. But the problem is, even with VPN, you're still going to get these things saved on your computer. So I have to go back to what I keep saying is, it's a total solution. It's not just VPN. You have to have your security software, your firewall, your VPN, cookie cleaners, all these different things, right? Social networks are the worst. I'm going to guess that most of the people in here are on Facebook. No? Oh, good. Okay. Anybody in here using Facebook Messenger? Okay. The best advice I get here is get rid of it. That is one of the worst security problems or privacy problems. When they did Messenger, it was like really bad. It's just got a horrible reputation of stealing all your privacy information. And again, encryption's only between the two endpoints. So once you go past that second endpoint in another country and you get to the internet, you're back in the Wild West. Okay. So, what we're trying to do is protect your sensitive information by using encryption to make it so that if anybody does intercept your data, it's meaningless to them. They can't do anything with it because it's encrypted, you need the key. They don't have the key, they can't read your data. Data integrity. Okay, so sometimes the really clever people will suck data out of your data stream and put their own data in it. Or maybe it happens by accident. Something gets scrambled up. So the thing about VPN, because it's doing this encrypt and decrypt, it's also checking the data to be sure that it's valid. It hasn't been messed with. So that's data integrity. The data that was received was actually the data that you sent. So that's the benefit of VPN. You browse anonymously. Browse anonymously, and not leave traces. So if you have the right software on your computer and you use VPN to complement that software, it allows you to go to a place somewhere else in the world and not reveal much information about yourself, so you can be anonymous. Bypass the geo-blockades, censorship filters, and covert monitoring. That goes back to the geo-blockades and geofencing, like in China and the Middle East. If you're trying to access the internet, they won't let you access certain information. I think some countries are banning Twitter and Facebook, you know, because they're basically, the government's scared that people are going to be saying things against the government, you know. What else we got here? Sometimes you can access media, like Netflix or other services, by pretending that you're located somewhere else. And I think that's it. Okay. So we go back to the question we started with. Who should be using VPN? You know, I say everybody, but if you're on a public network or if you carry a phone in your pocket and you go to the store, there are Wi-Fi hotspots all over the place. And by default, your phone is probably set to automatically connect to any available networks. I highly recommend you disable that feature. And well, that would be a setting that's different in every phone. If you have Android, different versions, Android, iPhone, you have to go into your Wi-Fi settings. Settings, but particularly the Wi-Fi. Yeah, it looks like I'm. It's a big topic. It's only three letters long, but it's a lot of information. So, okay.
It apparently doesn't matter that your phone has one company supporting it, and your computers has another company supporting it, and the network that you're logging into has still a third company doing the stuff.
That is a very good point too. So, everybody's competing for your data. And my phone is Verizon, my internet at home is through Cox, and I'm connecting to other services and banking, whatever. They all want my information. And so there are certain things out there that are standardized so that they're all using the same protocols. So that means if you use one of these programs, it will solve the problems equally for all these different types of environments. So, no special challenges there. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe, for a very informative presentation.
Thank you.